Today on The Independent, Pete and I preview Notre Dame's Blue Gold Spring Game coming up this Saturday.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson. After a long tour of Australian French Polynesia, now back in South Bend, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna, who's been in Chicago this whole time.
I'm going away next week, but I stayed loyal to you guys during spring ball.
But yeah, by not recording with an unnamed new co-host just to fill a podcast feed, I appreciate that.
I read Tim O'Malley. He said you were gone for 72 days.
Yes, exactly. It was, there was a lot of travel, a lot of air, a lot of cruising, some scuba diving, all that good stuff. And frankly, you get back and while Notre Dame has a new AD officially now, I'm not sure a whole lot happened during spring practice between the first open practice that I was able to watch and the second open practice that I was able to watch as I got back the day before, which was, I think, probably going to be much more interesting to have witnessed in person than the Blue Gold game on Saturday. But the Blue Gold game will happen. Spring practice will close, and we probably will have some mild overreactions to it that we won't remember when August starts. But when you'll be out here on Saturday, what are you curious to see? What sort of will pique your interest on Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, P. I mean, the starting quarterback got hurt while you were gone, and the future looked like the future during that open scrimmage on Saturday. And speaking of overreactions, although I'm not sure I think it's a warranted reaction in this case because there's been a lot of hype around CJ Carr. But I actually think the overreactions in this college football world is going to be less about what happens Saturday and what happens afterward, because you know people will be going in the portal. Look how many people. There was a record number of players just went in the portal Monday when it opened up post-spring. I don't know if I can name you five guys off the top of my head nationally where I'm like, oh, shoot, that guy's in? Wow. Like, it was just a lot of people. It was a lot of movement, and it's newsy in that regard because there's unlimited transfers, and you can retool your roster very quickly now. But, you know, short of, like, CJ Carr going in next week, which isn't going to happen, I don't think there's going to be – there'll probably be a quarterback just because of the numbers game. I think that's where the overreaction will come. The football part of it will be interesting. I mean, this is second time in 3 years, and I feel like we could go back even further where the starting quarterback for the season will not be playing in the spring game. So I don't know how – I mean, yeah, we'll probably overreact good or bad to CJ Carr, but, you know, we're not going to see Riley Leonard in this offense, at least barring some medical miracle, and even then I would not play him in a spring game. I'm curious to see – how's the offense kind of come together, so to speak, because we knew the defense was the strength of this program. That has bared fruit throughout the first month of spring practices. What does that mean in the grand scheme of things? Is this offense going to benefit greatly from going up against these guys every day? The short answer is yes, but what lessons are they going to take away from getting beat more often than not from the sound of it?
I'm curious about that as well, because it took me back to a story that I wrote on the relationship between Tommy Reese and Clark Lee during the 2020 season, or I think it was the 2020 season. Yeah, that was the year, because it ran the week of the Clemson game. And just how they sort of tried to help each other but also compete with one another. If Reese needed a particular look in practice, Clark was going to be accommodating of that. If they needed to accomplish something defensively, a pressure package, Reese wouldn't sort of cheat the drill and have, you know, some like bomb, you know, go route beaters, installed. And I'm not sure what the relationship is between Al Golden and Mike Denbrock. I would think that's probably developing. I don't know what the relationship was between Jared Parker and Al Golden. But when you listen to Marcus Freeman talk, it certainly sounds like Al Golden's going to do his stuff whether you want him to or not. Can the offense figure out a way to benefit from getting pressured and having to adjust to stuff that they may not see again next season? If you're going against a defense that's so exotic that it actually doesn't prepare you to do the basics right, you know, how beneficial is that? I don't know. You know, but I think that the offense probably needs to have some success going into the summer, probably more success than what they've had during the course of spring practice when, you know, we've had some limited looks at them. But I think just sort of ending on a high note there would be a positive. And like, look, last year's spring game, Sam Hartman looked like a Heisman Trophy candidate. Tyler Buchner looked like he was going to end up in the transfer portal the very next week. One of those things proved true. You know, it was the best performance by Hartman against an elite defense all season. But, you know, so whatever the offense shows, I don't think the statistics matter. I think it's just like they need to have some good vibes going into the offseason. It's like, okay, we got step one installed with Den Brock over the course of the last 15 practices. Now we can build on it, opposed to, damn it, Golden stop blitzing Jalen Snead off the edge on third and five. We can't account for, you know, these 8-man pressures. So seeing the offense take a step forward, even if it's not a huge one, I think could be beneficial going into the summer.
Right. I think it's getting like the foundation laid and getting those basic steps right. Right. Again, it's going to be different without your starting quarterback. The rosters are being sorted out Thursday, Team Wash, Team McCullough. I don't know if you saw the video they put out. They had WWE superstar Odyssey Jones come out and preview it and bring a championship belt and say the winner's going to get this for the third installment of Wash McCullough. I was a huge WWE fan growing up. I'm not as into it as some of your colleagues still are at The Athletic. I did not know who Odyssey Jones was, but
it seems cool.
And if I were in college, I had to look up that name. If I were in college and I saw that and I saw the belt, I get riled up as well. But again, I think it's, you know, you read the practice reports and you see some of the highlights, and a lot of it is, hey, the offensive line's been pretty good at run blocking, but not great at pass protecting. Well, how much of that is the offensive line versus whoever's back at quarterback at that time? So-and-so gave up a sack. It was uncontested. How much of that was him getting beat versus him miscommunicating and letting a free rusher go through, which you cannot make mistakes.
Yeah, or the quarterback not identifying the free rusher.
Right, you know, and this was a top 10 defense last year going up against first-team offenses, and they're going up against an offense right now in practice that, while a first-team offense is going to have upwards of 10 new starters with a rotating cast of quarterbacks right now throughout spring. So it's not to make excuses for the offense, but you certainly want to see them get their stuff together, so to speak, and have the confidence and wherewithal going into the summer off-season workouts, going into camp in August, knowing that, hey, we're battle tested. We know we're ready. We see this every day in practice, iron sharpens iron, and we're going to be ready to go come College Station.
Yeah, that's part of it. One thing that I liked last Saturday that I think could carry over to a certain extent is just, it seemed like they had more guys at the wide receiver position who could make plays, like functional football players, you know, can make a man miss, make catches in traffic. You know, Jaden Greathouse, a star of last year's spring game, who wasn't able to sort of do that during his freshman year. Hamstrings had a ton to do with that. You know, can he look like more of a wide receiver one? I wrote this, I think, after the practice that, you know, last year Jaden Thomas was your number one wide receiver by default. There was nobody good enough to even remotely challenge him. That's not the case anymore. So,
no, and if he pulls a hammy again,
yeah,
it's not, oh, yeah, there goes our passing game.
Right. It's Notre Dame just has more options there. You know, Chris Mitchell did a couple good things in the practice. You know, Jaden Harrison is hurt, the transfer Marshall, Bo Collins not yet eligible. So they just have more tools to work with. If you're Mike Denbrock, they don't have LSU level tools, you know, 2 first round picks at wide receiver and a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. But I think that they should have more tools than they did last year. You know, Denbrock's talked a lot, or has been asked a lot. Marcus Freeman's been asked a lot about, you know, so 11 personnel, changing the identity a little bit of what they are offensively. And, you know, some of that is personnel driven. I think some of that is philosophy driven, with Denbrock having sort of seen that, like, you pass to run, not run to pass. You know, Reese and Parker were kind of run to pass guys. Not that they always wanted to be, but in theory, Denbrock should have a better quarterback than what either of those guys had, you know, in their final 2 seasons at Notre Dame. So that all is interesting to me. But I like the wide receiver group. And I haven't said that for years, it feels like. So that's a significant change. That's something that I think should carry over from spring into summer and then into fall.
I like the wide receiver group. I like the numbers at wide receiver more than anything right now. Even without Audric Estime, I love the running back group. Like, that's not like, I think collectively as a unit, this offense is more talented 1 through 11 than last year's. Now, there's not going to be a top 10 pick on this offense like there is next week with Joe Alt, but I think the talent's there. It's about making sure you're ready to operate from the get-go, because you're not easy into anything when you're open in at College Station, presumably under the lights, probably in 100 degree weather. I mean, you better hope it's under lights, because it won't be as hot then. It's you know, you always hear like the coaching cliche of like the defense is always ahead of the offense, and you can fake it on offense more than you can on defense, because, you know, one person messes up, the whole thing collapses on defense. But I'm very curious to see Mike Denbrock there. Is like, I feel comfortable with a veteran offense coordinator back there who's been at Notre Dame before and who's gone. If you look at his career, it was what, Brian Kelly to Luke Fickell to Brian Kelly to Marcus Freeman, offensive head coach, defense head coach to offense head coach, defense head coach. Like, I think, you know, he's got the right bag of tools, so to speak, and wherewithal to tailor his offense to what this program needs it to be. And I do think they will get there. I'm not concerned about them right now. If anything, and again, we knew the defense was going to be the strength coming in, just seeing the number of different names making plays on that defense. I mean, not that the first team defense is dominating the first team offense, but that we're seeing so many names, especially young names on that side of the ball, emerging and looking like they're going to force their way onto the field this year, despite all the veteran leadership in front of them, I think is what's impressive when you look at that side of the ball.
It's for how old and talented the defense should be. Riley Mills, Howard Cross haven't got a ton of reps this spring. Benjamin Morrison has been out after shoulder surgery. You know, Xavier Watts has been around. We've seen him play quite a bit. Jack Kaiser, seen him play quite a bit. But even without those guys at, you know, 85% of the snaps, 90% of the snaps, you know, Jalen Snead, Kingston Viliamasa, Jaden Osbury, Christian Gray,
Bubakar Traore,
you know, Josh Burnham has done some good stuff. It's it feels like it's an old defense that's talented, but also maybe deeper than what I thought it was going to be, or maybe what it's been in the past, you know, where they've been sort of, their first 11 has been very good. Maybe they've got, you know, Ryan Clark has done some good stuff that we've seen. You know, he's not
Ryan
stout like Thomas Harper, but yeah, not Ryan Clark, Jordan Clark. But it just feels like, maybe there's a little bit more depth. Like, the talent of this defense is what we thought it was going to be. It's really good in the first 11, but it may be a deeper group than what we thought.
It looks a lot deeper than I thought it would be, at least right now.
You're going to re-add Gabe Rubio too.
I did not expect to see this many names emerge, so to speak. And again, it's spring ball. I don't want to get ahead of our skis here, but you know, there's a reason Clarence Lewis went in the transfer portal. Jordan Clark should be the starting nickel. Like, that competition was over. Lewis emerged at Syracuse this past week. But I mean, and we'll see some more of those next week, because that's just the way things go. I'm curious, and you know this better than I do, how many additions, if any, do you really think are on the way? I mean, it doesn't seem realistic to get at Notre Dame a ready-made offensive lineman in late April, early May, and have them ready for week one. I could be wrong there, but history does not really favor that.
Yeah, that's the problem that with Notre Dame, they recruit the position well enough that you're rolling out Charles Jagasaw, Tosh Baker, and Emil Wagner. Tosh Baker and Jagasaw are both 6'7" and up and 320 pounds. Emil Wagner is, you know, air quotes, tiny at 290, 285, and is super athletic. So I'm not sure you're going to find somebody good enough to take their jobs. I'm a little concerned about how aggressive they were to try to get somebody in the winter portal. but it seems even harder in the spring portal unless somebody they're going after changes their mind. Maybe Caden Proctor will come. Who knows? He's available at this point. That's a joke. So, you know, at corner, yeah, they're looking to add the Rice transfer, Trayshawn, I think it's Devons, is supposed to visit this week. You know, he's probably like a Clarence Lewis, Jordan Clark type, in terms of like, can he help you? Yes. Is he going to be Benjamin Morrison? No. But I don't think that's the point. Like, and you mentioned this at the top of the show, the portal now, this phase of it is sort of, you're working around the margins. Like Notre Dame's not going to find a new starter in the portal. Maybe a new starting punter. Yeah, but they're not going to find a new.
Hardly
new. The idea that they're going to find a new starting offensive tackle or a new starting corner. You know, tight end is something that I've heard about, but Mitchell Evans, Eli Raritan, and Cooper Flanagan, you're not going to find somebody better. I don't think you're going to find somebody better than the third of those three.
Why would you transfer to Notre Dame if you're a tight end? To transfer to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh,
I'm
not happy that I'm playing at school X. I'm going to go there. There'll be plenty of opportunities there.
It is. I mean, it is kind of one of those things. I wish that they had kind of got. Is it Ben Jurecek from Stanford who ended up going to Georgia? That's somebody that would have been interesting in a Notre Dame uniform. But I think their biggest need is at the hardest position to get, offensive line. And like even offensive tackle, if you want to like get even more micro with that. So,
well, I'd say hardest position to get at Notre Dame.
Yeah. Like, I think it's just the hardest position to get anywhere, but like at Notre Dame, it's even harder than that. Like there's such a volume of DBs and wide receivers and running backs. For once, you really don't need any of them. If you're Notre Dame, so you don't need a quarterback. I don't think you need a tight end. You know, defensive line.
And do you need depth? Like, assuming Tyson Ford leaves, do you need depth?
Yeah, it's like, can you find the next Chris Smith from Harvard from a couple years ago? You're a fourth defensive tackle. That might be helpful. But I think that if you're Notre Dame, what would be more valuable is a younger defensive tackle who has multiple years of eligibility, because after the season, you lose Cross and Mills. So getting a guy with just 1 year, I'm not sure that makes a ton of sense. Maybe you can get a senior with 2 years, but it's a pretty good roster. I mean, when we talk about a roster that has good depth, that would imply you're not taking a whole lot of transfers. And, you know, Notre Dame has recruited well enough and developed well enough from Brian Kelly now into Marcus Freeman that it's not a roster, especially now at wide receiver, that they've patched that hole. It's just not a roster that you look at and think like, wow, they really need a lot of help here. They're probably going to be better off. No, we're going to develop better here. We're going to put more into Charles Jagasa. We're going to put more into Emil Wagner and sort of let them develop on the field a little bit. I think that's probably ultimately the move you got to make if you're Notre Dame. It's time to get back outside with Roback, one of our favorite brands at The Independent. Whether it's polos, Q-zips, vests, crewnecks, or hoodies, Roback is our go-to apparel when it comes to the golf course, gym, sitting around the fire, or even recording a podcast. You've seen Roback sponsor former Notre Dame athletes Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. And if you've attended a Notre Dame game, you've surely seen the Shamrock Polo around tailgates and in the stands. Roback goes by the motto, crave activity, and there's no better apparel to fit those needs. Listeners of The Independent can get 20% off your first purchase by using the promo code IRISH at Roback.com. Again, that's 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more on your first order. With the promo code IRISH, visit Roback.com.
Big picture, I think Saturday, John Bryce, I think, was the first report. Notre Dame is expected to announce the groundbreaking of a new football complex.
Not the plans for future groundbreaking, I believe.
Is that it wasn't clear to me. I know the announcement's coming Saturday. Yes. And I know they expect this thing open in summer of 26, if I'm not mistaken. So got a ways to go there time-wise. Well overdue. And I don't say that because you need a slide and, you know, sleep pods or whatever. Just like, and I was told like, hey, the highlight of this thing is going to be the cafeteria. And my response was, damn straight, it better be. Like,
yeah,
we're not, they don't do interviews. Just like, under Kelly, most of the interviews, the majority of the Brian Kelly era, most of the interviews, most of the times we were on campus doing our jobs, we were in the Gook in various spots interviewing players. It's all at the indoor facility now, with good reason. But the number of times I'd been up to the coach's office floor, which is on the same floor as the cafeteria, and I just look around and I think,
where? Well, it's not even a cafeteria.
Right. Where are they supposed to eat? It's it's hard to believe a Division One, you know, blue blood football program for so many years. I'm sure when they opened it in 2005 or whatever, it was state of the art. But I've been in MAC facilities that are nicer than that. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. So this is well overdue from a practical standpoint. I don't know what the final cost is going to be. I do know there's a $75 million league gift to fund it. And I'm sure there'll be a big ceremony and whatnot to announce it on Saturday. But good news, because many people, including a certain head coach at LSU, have been told about plans for this for many, many years. And it's finally actually going to happen, which I think makes a lot of people around there happy.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what the details are of it. Food services was, if not the number one priority, then the 1A priority. The way staffs have expanded over the last 20 years of college football just wasn't built with that in mind. There's so many things this thing was not built with.
School 20 years ago, Pete. We joke, it's probably like, wow, they've really embraced the transfer portal in the last year. Like, think about all the things they didn't embrace 20 years ago under the Charlie Weiss regime.
Yeah.
Pre-Jack Swarbrick versus now. Like, it's just.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it's wild to think back to like where Notre Dame was about the idea of training table being bad. Like, they shouldn't have it at all.
You have no excuses now, Brian Kelly. You got what your predecessor didn't get.
Yes. You can eat steak in privacy. That was like, we were still having the debate about whether they should be eating the dining halls and whether Res Life and an offense for marijuana was grounds for dismissal from the school. Like, it was a completely different era, and Notre Dame has gotten with the times in a very Notre Dame way, but it's changed, it's evolved. Don't let people trick you to think that Notre Dame does it the way they've always done it, just because they like to say that they do
it to win it now, and
yeah,
rightly so.
This is in There is a pendulum here that does swing from, one side to the other about how in you are to football and maybe how it not. They're really into football right now. And we've been talking about this for the last year. Notre Dame is pot committed on football right now. And frankly, on Marcus Freeman, in a way that if you're a Notre Dame fan, that's like a little bit skeptical of like, just do they want to win as much as I want them to win? The people making the decisions now want Notre Dame to win as much as you want them to win. And like the plans for this, I think, will be yet another bit of evidence that supports that position.
I mean, they opened the indoor practice facility 2018, I think. They announced in spring 2018, and they open again. That's a lot less of a heavy workload than actual office building, but they opened that, I want to say, that fall or close to it. I mean, it was a pretty quick turnaround and a necessary one. And I would say more necessary than the Goog, because that's where you're practicing every day. And if you've been in there, it's functional. It's ideally located. It's, among the indoor, just simply practice facilities, you could put that up with anything, and they got it done quickly. And I think, if you ask people involved with the program both then and now, they would say, yeah, we needed that. I mean, I remember talking to, someone who grad transfers from Notre Dame to another school and was back in Notre Dame, and we got together once shortly after the new one had gone up, and he was like, at Notre Dame, if I wanted to go work out at night, I could not get into Loftus because a million other programs here were practicing or running track or whatever. At my current school, I could do that, and now at Notre Dame you can do that, which is, again, that's only 5 years ago. It's pretty absurd to think that wasn't a possibility. And let's also, give them credit. I don't know if this got mentioned enough during the whole swan song for Jack Swarbrick, but like, I do think the best thing he did from a practicality standpoint, like his legacy play for me at Notre Dame will always be the Campus Crossroads Project.
Yeah, I agree.
I think one, aside from the fact that the stadium needed modernization, and when you go in it now versus when you went in it pre-2017, it's night and day, and it's such a better experience for everybody. The way that is now a 365-day-a-year in-use building, whereas similar structures at other campuses still only get used 6 or 7 days a year. Like, just it just and it didn't some I don't want to say it's revolutionary, but like, anytime I look at a big school looking at stadium renovation now, I'm like, look at Notre Dame. Like, they turned it into the hub of their campus. And I mean, you've been in those rooms, they're unbelievable. People have weddings there. It's really, really nice.
No, they did a very nice job of that. It's, I mean, they're the facilities that they built. I mean, I think you even look at their soccer and lacrosse facilities. It took too long to get a basketball facility done, but it got done. That's, I think, very good. Notre Dame's facilities are like top notch. And I think, you know, Swarbrick is right to sort of stick his chest out on it a little bit that, I mean, we'll see what the details look of the new operations center, you know, on Saturday during the Blue Gold game, which frankly may be more interesting than the game itself. But if it's like the indoor, if it's like how they did the stadium, then it should be outstanding. It should give Marcus Freeman everything he needs to feel like he's backed at the highest level. And then you just have to go out there and do it. Notre Dame's just not going to have, not that Notre Dame is making excuses, but if they wanted to, they would not be able to after this gets done. That's probably the best way to put it.
Well, at most schools, I don't say this to say Notre Dame's too different from them, but again, the push-pull there. You ask an athletic director what their job is, they'll say to eliminate excuses for my coaches. You want this, you got it. Go win games. That's oversimplifying it, but there is a everyone's in sync right now, from the new president to the new AD to the still relatively new head football coach, in a way that I don't think we've seen in quite some time. And that's
alignment. Is that called alignment? That's how Brian Kelly described it.
I will say this, and clearly things reared their ugly head toward the end there. I mean, they were business wise, they were pretty aligned. You know, they didn't let whatever personal pettiness was going on there get in the way of like winning football games. Like, that's still a pretty functional, high operating football program, Brian Kelly's last 5 years there, despite all the internal trauma, which again is impressive and makes me wonder what they can do with people who actually like each other. Every spring, maybe not every spring, they do these things around the spring game, which is smart, especially for their broadcast partners.
This is like, you know, NBC contract extension, I think, was last Kelly year.
That was last year at a game, but spring game, I mean, they announced a Kelly, I think they announced a Kelly extension 1 year. They announced the move to field turf 1 year when they deliberately let the field look like crap. And we didn't even need instant replay because you could see the track marks on the cleats to see whether they're out of bounds or not on the dirt on the sideline. Maybe a Jumbotron. I mean, they've strategically done this around that, and it's good. I mean, it's something else to look forward to. I'm curious. Did you see Ole Miss, what they did last week for the spring game?
I didn't. It sounds like a kind of a minor league baseball feel to it.
I always think of minor league baseball where it's like everything matters except what happens on the field in minor league baseball. And frankly, for spring festivities, so to speak, it's a little bit like that. And maybe Notre Dame will be like that. I mean, I believe it's Alumni Weekend or Legends Weekend or something like that. But they've got a million home sporting events going on this weekend as well. CBS Sports had a good story on it, basically saying, like, is this the future of spring games? And Lane Kiffin had, you know, Joey Chestnut come and do a hot dog eating contest because he said he slid into his DMs. They let students above 21 bring their own alcohol into the stadium. Above 21, I said. Okay. They had all these other things. And Kiffin gave some quotes after where he's like, in the portal era, why would I give anything up? Because Blake Murphy played in Texas' spring game last year, and his, it was the worst thing that ever happened to Texas because that guy got tampered with all spring. by other coaches who are like, all right, come play for us. Like, you're not going to play there this year, and you're probably not going to play there when Arch is ready. So I get that standpoint of it. I don't know if he'll ever reach the bells and whistles of a Lane Kiffin operation at Notre Dame, but I do think one of, you know, much the same way Fox broadcast their first spring game last week with Ohio State, we'll be doing it, I believe, again with Michigan coming up soon. I do think we're going to start seeing spring games in a different light. Not that we ever like cheered on the blue versus the gold specifically or what have you, but I'll be curious. Again, the WWE belt's one small way to show that, but I'll be curious to see how these turn into campus-wide events moving forward.
Yeah, it's I mean, I think it's always a little bit more tricky in the Midwest, right? Like, if you took that approach last weekend when it was 72 degrees and sunny, be genius.
It's tricky at a small,
maybe 45 and sunny,
a small private school with a vast alumni base. I mean, Ohio State and Penn State will get 60, 80,000 there on any given Saturday for a spring, regardless of weather. But again, that's a drive.
Yeah.
Very easy, like, drive. Saturday, and the people,
49 and sunny. The best attended Notre Dame spring game was Jimmy Clausen's early enrollee year.
Was the weather good that year?
The weather was great. And then Notre Dame went 3-9. So,
is that the first early enrollee class, by the way, on the subject of things they did differently? No,
it was
around that time.
It was about 2 years later, maybe just a year later.
I believe it was under Weiss.
Yeah, it was under Weiss. 2006, the freshmen in 2006, I believe, were the first early enrollees, and Clausen was 2007. So it's just a year later.
And redshirting was like,
oh,
I remember my first time covering a Brian Kelly press conference. He refused to say the word redshirt. I was the new guy, and I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Yes.
Now it's like,
things where Notre Dame has evolved.
Now it's like, oh yeah, you're 6
year. Fine.
Come on down.
No problem. We'll take transfers for anybody. Yeah, it's, they definitely have evolved and gotten with the times on that. And, you know, we'll see what the blueprints look like for whatever they're going to call this new facility. It's not going to be called Goog 2.0. And the way it's been described, like what breadcrumbs I've been able to pick up, it doesn't really sound like an extension at all. It just sounds like a completely new building.
I believe so. That's my understanding. Yeah.
So that it'll be interesting to see how all that shakes down. Yeah. Is there anything else that, aside from architectural renderings, that you're curious to see?
I want to see CJ Carr myself.
Yes.
I want to see CJ Carr. I want to see other people see CJ Carr. Like, does that make sense? Like,
it's a bit meta.
Not that that's going to be like Texas A&M this Saturday, but it's going to be his dress rehearsal in front of a home crowd that's been dying to see him. Not all that dissimilar to what you said with Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting and interesting in that regard. You know, the weather, I think it's going to be 51 and maybe sunny. It's whatever. It's not bad. It's not great. But yeah, you hope no one gets hurt. You hope they have fun. If Steve Angeli dives at him for the game-winning touchdown on the last play of the game, all the better. And the rubber match between McCullough and Washington, I believe, as well.
Could you tell me who won each of the first two?
I was at the one 2 years ago. I think Washington won it. So I'm going to say Washington last year, McCullough this.
There's a 50% chance that you're right.
What's it?
There's a 50% chance that you're right.
Okay. Well, that's why I'm coming this Saturday. Got to sell this runs and for all.
Yeah.
My question is, if either Washington almost got the Boston College job, I mean, who would have taken over spring duties?
Oh, yeah. That would have been, that would have been difficult. Yeah, it's weird. These spring games, like, occasionally get a moment that you might remember a week later, but for the most part, these things come and go and you're not entirely sure what happened. I mean, last year it was Sam Hartman. Okay. When is Tyler Buchner going to leave? Which I think ultimately was 48 hours later. I don't expect, like, they'll have transfers out, but it's not going to be Buchner, Logan Diggs, Lorenzo Styles level of players. You know, it may be some guys farther down the roster who are fringe players, but
I don't have inside information, but I will bet a hefty amount of money a quarterback is in the portal for Notre Dame very soon.
It would be surprising.
Minchie or Angeli, which would just make sense for their sake, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It's they will lose guys, but I think it will be guys outside of the top 44 on the roster. And for, and look, frankly, they need to lose some guys because they're over the 85 man limit, I think, by 3 right now. So
I feel like everybody is now. Like that was another. Like
you have to be.
How many times was like, well, Notre Dame ever, like how many years in the Brian Kelly era was it like, this is going to be the year they get to 85.
Yeah, it was not until the very end when I think they actually were able to make a move on that.
Have to be now. It's a completely different sport right now. And some for the better, some for the worse. I'm not complaining about it. It's made our lives a lot more entertaining, but it's just so different.
There's no doubt. It will be interesting to sort of see some of the stuff on Saturday, but as we talked about, the most interesting thing of Notre Dame's blue gold game will be blueprints, because it's sort of the last thing, right? Like what else do people complain about with Notre Dame football about, like, when are they going to do X, Y, or Z? This is the last one.
Let students bring their own beer in.
Oh yeah. Students bring their own beer. I mean, I think Notre Dame has NIL in a very good spot right now. You don't retain the players they retain and add the transfers that they do without having a very strong NIL presence. They do that. Recruiting is good. The coaching staff is stable. They're paying their coordinators. They're going to have a cafeteria. They're not going to be rolling food on the street. It all gets back to kind of the thing that unites all of this is like Notre Dame is all in on football in a way that in my 24 years covering them, I'm not sure I would have said they've been this in this many ways at one time. And that's, to me, is significant.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think a rising tide lifts all ships. And especially when you have a head man who's fully embracing every fiber of this place and is a guy everyone wants to root for. Why not? Why not just go for it?
Absolutely. All right. We'll end this episode of The Independent there. Matt and I will be back to wrap up the blue gold game at some point over the weekend. But
hopefully we won't need to do an emergency.
Yeah. Oof, Saturday. Yeah, that would be bad. You know, knock on wood here. There will be no emergency post blue gold game podcast. We'll be back afterwards to think things through and go over architectural designs on the next episode of The Independent. So until then, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on The Independent.